You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Hello, Horse World. I'm Julie Broadway, president at the American Horse Council.
And I'm Megan Arsman, marketing and communications specialist with the American Horse Council. And you are listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Good morning, Horse World, and thank you for tuning in. Spring has definitely sprung, Julie. The weather is starting to warm up. Hopefully, it's more consistently warm for you where you are than I am here in Indiana. The horses are starting to shed, and I know my saddle is calling my name. I'm hoping to get more riding time this year than last year, including hitting some trails. But I know you got to do some trail riding in Arizona earlier this year, Julie, when you were visiting a former podcast guest at Whitestone Ranch. Do you have any plans to hit the trails again soon?
Well, I certainly hope so, Megan. I had a great time when I was in Tucson with Russell at White Stallion Ranch, and it was the first time I got my husband on a horse, and we went for a nice scenic trail ride, which is always great fun, and now I have photographic evidence that he can get on a horse. So I'm looking forward to getting out. It's not quite warm, and it's rainy here in Washington, D.C. today, so it may be a little while before the ground's a little firmer and we can get out there on the trails, but it's an exciting time of the year. And I know in certain areas of the country, people are already out, and we're seeing a lot of groups across the country, state horse councils and others advertising, you know, their trail riding events coming up this spring.
Yep, definitely something to keep track of on social media and all. But I'm excited for today's episode. We're going to be talking about getting outside and hitting the trails with our two guests. We'll have Heidi Malocco, and we'll have Chris Perkins from the Outdoor Recreation Roundtable. So let's get to our first guest as we highlight trail riding and the great outdoors.
So listeners, today's American Horse Council podcast is brought to you by our corporate sponsor, C. Jarvis Insurance. C. Jarvis Insurance Agency, where integrity, professionalism, loyalty, and compassion have been the cornerstone of their business for nearly 80 years. What they do really speaks for itself. They are very proud to be corporate sponsors, and we're very proud to have them as corporate sponsors. Mm-hmm. And they are with you every step of the way, from tragedy to triumph, when you have a dream worth protecting. So that's why you entrust it to somebody like C. Jarvis Insurance. It takes a horseman to understand, and C. Jarvis Insurance Agency offers all types of coverage for your needs for your equine endeavors, whether that be equine mortality, worldwide coverage, farm, ranch, or liability. So C. Jarvis Insurance is protecting your dreams for the last four generations and for more generations to come. So listeners, I'm so excited to have Heidi Malocco with us today. She is the Director of Operations at Horse Trails of America. But many of you know Heidi because she's been in our space a good long time. She has a bachelor's degree in English and a master's degree in journalism. And she is known for her stories and her photography work in a lot of equine publications. She's had over 35 magazine covers. She's done everything you can think of in the print realm. And then she decided she would go into video broadcasting. So now she spent some time directing a popular RFD TV show for about 10 years. She's engaged in all sorts of ways in the industry, from being involved with the Colorado Horse Council to the Certified Horsemanship Association to PATH International, where she's a registered instructor. She's done presentations at just about every international conference or equine affair or other venue out there. And we're just delighted to have her with us. And most recently, she took on this role as Director of Operations, and she's just got Horse Trails of America just booming, blossoming like you wouldn't believe. Somebody on my staff said, have you checked out their social media page? Look how many followers that they've got. It's just amazing. So Heidi, we're delighted to have you with us today.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and I might need to re-record that intro. That was a very nice intro. Thank you.
Hey, so kick this thing off for us today by talking a little bit about Horse Trails of America. What is their mission? What are their goals and objectives? Sort of what's the niche that you guys are trying to fill out there, Heidi?
Sure. So Horse Trails of America started as a Facebook group in 2012. So it's been around a while in that capacity. And then noticing that there was such a need for more information about the trails. I think there are so many amazing trail riding groups out there, but somehow it seems to be a part of our industry that is a little bit segmented. We love the backcountry horsemen, and we always highlight one of them in the magazine each month. And it's been wonderful to work with them through being on the committee with the American Horse Council. But there's a little piece there. And then there are the people that are just trying to lead out rides locally. And then there might be a little riding group that wants to ride together. So our goal and our vision now is really to help all those little pieces and parts within trail riding have one website, one location, one main place to find each other locally. So we know that we can't be in all places or know every trail across the country. I don't presume to be any kind of overall trail authority on every trail in the United States, but our goal is to help people find their local network so they can have a better presence within their local community, that they can build community, that they can find trails, keep up to date on the condition of the trails and where's good to ride, where is not, what's going on, you know, just if, is it too muddy to ride right now, things like that. So to have one resource that's really a place to help people get on the trails and then also to travel with their horses. A big part of what we're doing right now is helping people to find, where do you lay over? Where do you camp? How do you travel with your horse? What are all the rules for each state? So we have been working really hard on a lot of just resources in one place. And we're also inviting all of those regional, smaller trail organizations that are already set up to come onto hta.horse, which is the kind of shorter version of our website name, and to let people know in the state directories what's going on, where can they link to. That's all free for them to say, hey, come ride with us if they already have something set up there.
Well, I'm so glad that you guys have really started to pull all these threads together, because it's not uncommon for people to call our office and want the American Horse Council to help them figure out how to arrange their travel plans, how to find places to go ride and those things. And we're in a little awkward situation because we have a little bit of information, but not everything. But now we can say, right, go to Horse Trails of America, and it's great.
I hope so. But part of that is that we need people. It's interactive. We're not trying to be the authority. We're trying to be the resource in the location for that to be interactive. So we want people that know about the trails. Our map, people can actually go and put the trails that they like on, if they've laid over at a place, to either put that on or put the review up there. So we want people to engage with that and make sure that it's everybody's resource and not that we are some mightier than thou person that knows every trail.
Well, kind of like a one-stop shop almost.
Yeah, one-stop shop. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, the National Economic Impact Study that we just completed says the recreation sector is our largest sector.
Right.
Most people and the most horses involved in that sector. And I picked this one little tidbit out of the report because I found it just so fascinating. The Bureau of Land Management told us that specifically in recreation areas across the BLM land, for 2022, they estimated they had 3 million visitors participating in horseback use and another 46,000 visitors participating in pack use. And you take that over to the National Forest Service, where they say a percentage of their visitors participate in horseback riding, and their number was 206,000. And then you ask the National Park Service, and they say, oh, that's about 1.6 million people who are visiting the National Park Service in horseback riding activities. So they're out there, they're active, they're engaged, and I'm sure they're going to find your product and your solutions and resources to be of great help to them.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, I showed in college and rode with trainers that, you know, were showing at the higher levels of the common breed associations. And so I think I come from it from that perspective, the trail riders were the outliers. They didn't necessarily fit. Maybe there was a program for them, but maybe there wasn't. But I think everybody wants to belong to something. Everybody wants to feel like they have a resource. And trail riding is just as much of a sport to do with your horse as reining and some of the other things you can do. And in some ways, you have to have the most sacked out, ready for anything horse that you could, that some of those horses that are, you know, high dollar show horses wouldn't know what to do on the trail. So I think we need to get rid of that idea of it's just trail riding and really put the emphasis that this is a place to find out what other people in trail riding are doing. What can you aspire to? What are the best rides you can find? What are the fun little local places to ride just to keep you on your horse? And if you're not ready to travel across the country, where can you just go to make sure you're riding?
That's really cool. I love that you're making it really that you're making it interactive and everything, Heidi.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And so our map all summer, it still has been, but the summer was the launch of it initially. And our real goal with that is just to make people understand first that there are over, I think we're at 2,300 places on the map as it is that have been added by our people, horse people. But we want more than that, of course. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I wanted to have this like great resource ready before we even shared it with other people so that they realize, hey, this is something I want to keep adding to. And if a place is already there, I want to add my photos and my reviews and not just have that on social media because, oh my gosh, you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've had a few social media shutdowns and things that just scare you. But I think we have to really work to make sure there's a good chunk of information and mine all of that that's been shared there and have it on a map, have it on a resource that we can really depend on.
Right. And speaking of maps, and that's, you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, where they can find trails that allow horses, because unfortunately, not all trails allow trail riding with horses. I know around me, there's quite a few places that does not allow horses at all.
Right.
And also, then you also have to keep in mind that trails can be multi-user or shared. But are there equestrian-only trails, or, you know, what are some of the tips about, you know, using those multi-user or shared trails? And, it, you know, are if there is any equestrian-only trails, how do we, you know, I assume that your map is going to be able to show that as well?
Yes, yes. So awesome. On the map, you can actually, so there's a button to get to it straight from hta.horse, and then you can click to the map. There's a little tutorial video there to show you how to add something, how to get to it. But yes, you can actually decide first, am I looking for an actual trailhead? Am I looking for a campground? And then there's the layovers and things as well, but you can clear it. So you're only looking for that purpose. And then within that, when people are adding, they actually can put on there, are ATVs allowed on this? Are there a lot of bikes? Like, we have those sections. So we're hoping awesome. That when people go in and really review those trails, that they're using those subcategories. And even we even have a designation on there for whether or not you can drive on the trails for people that take their carts. So we want it ultimately to be a place where they can go and search for those things. So it's different than the other maps that are out there that it might say horse use on it, but you don't know, can my rig get in there? So we have a designation, how big of a trailer setting can you actually pull in? What's the largest that you're going to get in and get back out? Because that's a big issue on some of the trails as well. So yeah, it is. So I actually asked our group, knowing we're going to talk about the multi-use factor a little bit here, and you asked, are there horse-only trails? And the overwhelming report was not so many as there used to be, for sure. So it is harder to find, I think, nationwide trails that are horse-only. Now, there are some areas that I think because they have such a strong local network and they have really petitioned and kept up the trails. So, you know, horses have primary use. Mm-hmm. So there are some areas that definitely popped up in the comments, which we had. I posted it last night. I think 12,000 people saw it and I had over 100 responses. So good hot topic.
Wow. Yeah.
can you actually ride on a horse-only trail? Definitely some communities in California came up where they have, you know, they're drawing people to come and ride there because that's what's what people want to do. So it is horse only. And then other people, especially seemed like more Midwest to East, said there are horse only trails, but sometimes you'll see bikers or it's not maybe shared as well as it could be. So got a little bit into the controversy of, do we like bikes? Do we like e-bikes? And, but some also really good comments came up about just how can we share the trails? Because ultimately, if the bikers are the ones that are using the trail most often, they're still keeping a trail in use. So how do we educate and communicate well with those people so that we all can use it and the trails are still there?
Yeah, a lot of the state horse councils have had a campaign underway trying to educate all trail users about, you know, just the nice diplomacy of sharing the trails,
right,
being mindful of others and, you know, those kinds of things, and offering suggestions that sometimes when multi-users interact, those interactions can be a little frightening for a horse and those kinds of things. So lots of things to bear in mind when you're out there on the trails.
Right. And then you, of course, see the flip side of it of no one should bring a horse out if their horse isn't used to this and that. And you need to desensitize your horse. And I think, well, you know, as a horseman, you need to pick the trail that's going to be the best for your horse to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But the horse is going to need to gain experience somehow. So we do hope that there are some horse-only trails or some trails that they can look up that are going to be, you know, less intense as far as how many bikes or different things are going on the trail as well. So I know it's, and it's different when, you know, I live in Colorado and this is definitely mountain bike territory. So that's what has precedence and what's going to be really exciting for people, but we want horses out there as well where they're allowed.
Well, Heidi, I'm so excited that to have you on our Recreation Trails and Land Use Committee. You're a great partner for us and for Backcountry Horsemen of America. I'll give them a shout out because they're our service corps, if you will. They're
for
the people
sure
out there maintaining the trails for us and looking at trailheads and amenities and trying to make sure things work for us. And I know during the pandemic, we had an outpouring of people on the trails. I mean, almost overwhelming the trails riding with their horses. And there were a couple of places where it was a little bit challenging because there weren't enough campsites or the right kind of campsites,
right,
or there were different users on the trails than that might not have been on the trails pre-pandemic, and they didn't know the rules of the,
right,
of the trail, so to speak. So you guys have been a great addition to that committee in helping us think through, you know, what, how do we educate people about all these nuances of this?
Right. Online? For sure. And, you know, we are not in competition with them as I see it more, you know, if they have something going on and they want reports on are people using the campgrounds that aren't supposed to, or, you know, that aren't supposed to be in the horse spots and they're just camping there, things like that. We've put that up to our groups and to our members to try to help support that because, you know, I think we have maybe more what I call front country riders or flatlanders or people that do have show horses and just want to be able to get out on the trail and understand how to use that. But maybe they're not going to go, you know, up a steep mountain or do all of these bucket list rides. So I think it's important that we work together on some of those things.
I will confess that when I was at the Dude Ranch earlier or late last year, it was quite interesting to me, Heidi, to hear people there. Most of them were people who'd ridden before, but they were on a dude ranch on a very managed kind of guided ride. But to know your limits is really important because there were some people there that were definitely not seasoned riders. Maybe they did this on vacation occasionally and going up and down some of those cliffs and some of those hairpin turns. Not for everybody.
Well, I love White Stallion. That's so cool you got to ride there. But yes, you go from flatland and their low and slow rides to some pretty steep terrain very, very fast there. But I actually did a story and included them a couple of years ago, I think, for Horse and Rider on places you could go to actually ride. And what's cool about that, I mean, I know Russell knows, oh yeah, I'm a professional horse trainer. I can ride anything. And then he's like, okay, and I'll be putting you on Granny.
That's right.
But, you know, I think it's fun that they do have some programs there to, you know, get people who actually know how to ride to do more of the, you know, team penning and some fun stuff and actually ride. So even if you're not taking your horse, I think that's a fun aspect of what we can do at Horse Trails of America, too, is highlight some of those places you might not want to haul across the country, but where can you go and enjoy it and know you're on good horses and with good people and do what you got to do?
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about the kinds of questions you get from folks, like what ranging from, okay, what's the one essential item that I need to pack to go on a good trail ride to, okay, how frequently are there facilities to stop and relieve your horse or yourself or those kinds of questions?
Yes, yes. I think, you know, within the Facebook group, which is huge and self-manages a lot, you know, there are people on there that are much more educated about certain trails than I am. And I love that, you know, you can tell that they're a tried and true member and have been on there to help other people quite a bit. So I think one of the most common questions that we get is just like, if you're going to do this trail or this trail, which would you suggest? Or, you know, what they want to know, and hopefully we are putting resources on the website so that they can find some of those things. So they're really coming to find out, okay, hey, where should I go? I have this horse and this kind of trailer and I can trailer this far. What should I do? Or some people that haven't trailered that much before and they want to know like, oh gosh, I'm going to drive 9 hours. Where do I need to stop? And what do I need to know for, should I let my horse off or will he get loose? You know, some of those things that I feel like the seasoned riders have really stepped up to answer some of that, to calm some of those fears or worries that you would definitely have if you haven't done that so much before. But yeah, I think it's just a very good group. We've even had people that have, you know, posted in the moment that, hey, I broke down on this road. I need a place to stay tonight. Who can help me? This was before the map was up. And we had people saying, I can come get you with my trailer and I'm not that far off of there. And so just that community within, you know, being in a social group, I think is amazing that they do feel safe within the parameters that are on the social media group. And we just want to make sure that's taken over and they know that they can share those tidbits and help on the website as well. Again, like I said, I just never want Meta to shut us down altogether. It's such a good group. So, but I will say, I posted that question because I need a little help. Like, all right, well, what is your number one thing that you would have with you? And then my favorite comment was a horse and then your saddle because, you know, one time someone forgot one, but really was to have some kind of horse and human just emergency kit, medical kit, all the things you need to have, extra water. And I said, is that horse or human? They said, well, think about it for the horse, but most people don't bring enough water for them to drink and that's been such a problem. So those were the big things. And then some of our more seasoned contributors piped in with, you know, that they wouldn't leave anywhere in the backcountry without having an extra emergency, some kind of satellite phone or some kind of way to communicate, smart, not depending on your cell phone. So I think those are the main safety things of just health and safety. And then you can have fun if those basic needs are met, right?
And I learned, don't put your cell phone in a saddlebag in case your horse and you are separated.
For sure.
Keep the cell phone with you. That's what I learned. I learned that one pretty well. Not by experience. No, not by experience. I had quite a few people, somebody that I work for, we were taking pictures of products and we had a picture of somebody putting their cell phone in a saddlebag. And there were a lot of comments saying, do not put your phone in a saddlebag in case you and your horse become separated. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right, right. And so, but then you have to, you know, I'd come from having worked with CHA for many years and all the safety things, like you don't want straps that are going to get caught over the horn or you have to make sure that, you know, even if you have a vest and you have it in that pocket, that your vest goes up and down from both sides in case you get hung up over the saddle horn. And so you have to think about if you're going to keep it on you, how do you do that safely, right? Without all the straps and extra gadgets around.
So Megan, I have to tell a funny side story about that. I went trail riding many years ago with a girlfriend and she put her cell phone into her vest pocket and off we went. And somewhere along the way, she discovered that her phone had fallen out of her jacket. Uh-oh. That turned out to be a really long day because we rode around calling her cell phone riding up and down the trail trying. We found it eventually, but it was one of those lessons learned, like, let's not do that again.
And that's definitely when you want to make sure your ringer is up all the way and not on silence, for sure. For sure. So, Heidi, so it sounds like your guys' website and the map is a great tool for listeners to plan a vacation that includes trail riding. And it kind of almost sounds like the map is kind of like a Rand McNally for horse trails. And I have to say, for those who don't know about Rand McNally, back in the old days before GPS, we had a giant book of maps to plan our course for travel. I had to do that when I was on the rodeo circuit. But are you guys planning on doing an app for the map, or is there other ways that people can get have access to the map, say if they are on the road?
Sure. So the map is accessible and is mobile friendly to look it up on your phone as well. So if you go to the website, you do have to log in to get to the map, but you can choose a free access login to do that or become a full member of HTA. So there's different levels, but it is free. We want people to get in there and use it, but we just also want to protect it a little bit from all the spam and all the people that would add things that we don't want them to add to the map. So just a layer of protection. But definitely it's one of the things that I'd love to bring up quickly too, is we have an ambassador program that we have been working on since the fall. And so we are looking for, I think we only need about 12 more ambassadors for different states right now. But some of those ambassadors are actually really good at making trails and maps and really know their local areas so well, and maybe even have their own websites. A couple of them do. So what we've asked them to do is, if they're, for instance, Trail Riders Path is our partner and the developer is our ambassador for Pennsylvania. So all of her trails with the maps, with all the knowledge she has, they're listed on our map first. But then it helps you to get to those actual trail maps that she has. Same for Tennessee. Cool. He has tons of trails. But, you know, we want our site to be the main place that you find it first. But then we're sending people on to find the actual maps for the trails, more infos, video reviews, actual scenes of what it's like once you get there.
Great. Thanks, Heidi, for joining us today. We hope you'll stick around and listen to our next guest, but we've enjoyed having you and learning more about Horse Trails of America.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heidi. So our next guest has a lot to do with, you know, talking about managing the trails and kind of helping out with encouraging the outdoors. Chris Perkins is Vice President of Programs at the Outdoor Recreation Roundtable, where he works to promote the sustainable growth of the outdoor recreation economy. This work focuses on rural economic development through outdoor recreation infrastructure, state outdoor recreation advocacy, and the outdoor recreation workforce, and also while building a more inclusive outdoor recreation community. Chris received a master's in environmental management and a master's in business administration at the Yale School for the Environment and the Yale School of Management. Chris also worked for the U.S. House of Representatives Natural Resources Committee Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee. Chris supports founder Teresa Baker on the Outdoor SEO Diversity Pledge, which is a commitment for outdoor businesses and organizations to improve diversification and inclusion efforts. The pledge now has over 180 corporate and nonprofit partners. Chris lives in Jackson, Wyoming with his wife, Sheldon, kids, Silas and Molly, and their dog, Tilly. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome. What a pleasure.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit more about the Outdoor Recreation Roundtable, or as we also call it, ORR.
Well, I got to start by saying I've been spending the last 20 minutes scrolling Horse Trails of America. What a cool resource for the equestrian community. I might be joining this group shortly. So thanks for all the hard work behind that website. ORR, or Outdoor Recreation Roundtable, is a coalition of the leading associations in outdoor recreation, of which the American Horse Council is one. And those of your listeners who know about the history of the recreation industry know that each segment of outdoor recreation has had its own trained group for a long time. Like AHE started in the late 60s and has built up an incredible membership and advocates for horse priorities throughout the year. In 2018, the leaders of a lot of these organizations recognized that there was an opportunity to have one forum where all recreation interests were represented together, which would enable two things. One of which is to have an internal space for us to talk about issues of shared importance in the rec economy. And the other is to communicate with a unified voice to policymakers, to agencies, both at the federal and state level, about why outdoor recreation is so important. So in OR's membership, you'll see the full spectrum of recreation activities from hiking, biking, skiing, climbing, horseback riding, hunting, fishing, boating, RV, motorized, camping, hospitality, you name it. By having all those organizations under one roof, it enables us to put forth some really transformative policies in a bipartisan basis. I want to share a couple of examples of those with your audience.
Okay.
First, in the Obama administration, we worked really hard in Congress to establish something called the Outdoor Recreation Satellite Account. And what this does is provides a government measurement of the size of the outdoor recreation economy every year, which is really valuable for us to have the government saying, this is an important sector, it's important to the American economy, and we're going to measure its growth over time. And sure enough, in 2022, the government found that outdoor recreation contributes $1.1 trillion and 5 million jobs to the United States economy. That's 2.2% of our GDP. So having that kind of data was made possible by having the whole recreation sector come together. Another big win came in 2020 during the Trump administration, when again, we worked with Congress and a number of recreation and conservation partners to pass the Great American Outdoors Act, which for those of your listeners who are familiar, addresses a lot of the deferred maintenance challenges on federal public lands and waters and fully funds the Land and Water Conservation Fund. The whole premise behind the organization is that when we come together, we're more effective than when we operate alone. Right. Of course, every organization is going to have issues that are important to them that they're going to have to advocate for. And that's an important piece of the puzzle. ORR is about those issues that 95% of recreationists agree on that we can all get behind together. So that's a big motivator for us in the work we do.
It's so interesting, Chris. I love coming to ORR meetings and talking with my colleagues who are also in the outdoor rec space. I think one thing that sort of distinguishes us, we're the only activity that involves an animal.
Right.
So we're a little different. And so when boating and hiking and fishing and camping are all talking about trade tariffs and manufacturing challenges and some of those kinds of things, it's a little harder for us to sort of relate to that because we don't make horses, if you will. Right. But I thought I would share with the audience that the satellite account that you have, it measures what we contribute in outdoor recreation, just that component of our industry. So the equine industry contributes $177 billion annually to GDP. But if you take that and you break it out, just our recreation sector alone contributes about $37 billion to GDP each year. And there's almost 500,000 jobs in the recreation sector for us. So this is a really big, important component for us. And I just want the listeners to know that, you don't get a lot of things done in DC unless you have colleagues and coalitions and friends. So being part of ORR has been a big deal for the American Horse Council, because when we're struggling with an issue, we can go to an ORR meeting and we can find partners and others who are, going to support us and get behind some of the things that we're struggling because they are either struggling with them, or they know that in the long run, there's going to be an issue they have and they're going to turn to us and we're going to get behind and help them do the things that they do there. So I guess the question I should be building up to here is, what do you see, Chris, are some of the ways that ORR sort of works alongside and supports us, specifically the horse industry component?
Well, I want to touch on something you just said, Julie, in terms of the economic impacts of equestrian and horseback riding activities and why having those numbers are so important. I think historically, when policymakers look at outdoor recreation, they look at it as a kind of nice to have, something that's worth funding on a rainy day, but not like a core priority for healthy economies and healthy communities. But when you have these great economic impact statistics, like you describe, it transforms the activity itself from a nice to have to a must have. Mm-hmm. And it eliminates these situations that we've all seen where when budgets get tight, the federal government or state and local governments pull funding away from recreation infrastructure because it's not seen as valuable enough. If you could tell me that I have an opportunity as a policymaker to fund something that improves physical and mental health, it connects my communities, and it provides for a more diversified economy, I'd say sign me up. But a lot of policymakers don't understand the story of outdoor recreation in that way. So in terms of benefiting the equestrian sector, it's about finding those issues that are important for horseback riders that can be elevated at scale as part of the whole outdoor rec economy. A big package we're working on right now in Congress is called the Explore Act. And the Explore Act, which stands for Expanding Public Lands Outdoor Recreation Experiences, is a piece of comprehensive, bipartisan, bicameral legislation, meaning both House and Senate, that's been championed by members on both sides of the aisle to improve access and transform outdoor recreation opportunities on our public lands and waters. So these are things like modernized technology to improve visitor experiences, improve broadband connectivity at recreation sites when appropriate, digital recreation packages and passes, streamlining the permitting process, reducing burdensome fees for small business like horse operators that depend on reliable access to public lands, reducing park overcrowding by creating new and innovative models to encourage public recreation to less traveled areas, supporting the gateway communities that are adjacent to recreation opportunities, and transforming accessibility for individuals with disabilities by creating new accessible trails, and also promoting opportunities for veterans in the military. And this is the most comprehensive piece of recreation legislation ever. Any other major industry has these pieces of legislation that address it specifically. Recreation hasn't had that thing. So after decades of work, this package has come together and it's made huge progress. It's passed both the Senate and the House via unanimous consent. And now we just have some, you know, political jockeying to get it over the finish line. But again, to illustrate the value of ORR, that sort of outcome is made possible when the whole rec sector comes together. So it's really exciting for us to see that happen.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it too. So Chris, I'm looking down as my notes here of things I wanted to be sure and ask you about. Like a lot of other industries, we saw a really positive impact from the pandemic. I mean, a lot of people, as I said in our earlier interview, got out and were trail riding and that kind of thing. Have you seen that impact in other sectors of the outdoor recreation industry and have that continued to be robust and growing?
Definitely. I mean, I try not to remember 2020 because
we all do.
But the story as I remember it is in March 2020, concern about COVID becomes widespread. A lot of recreation sites, public lands and waters shut down because there's concerns about the spread of COVID and being part of that. And then once the science becomes clear that the outdoors is actually a much safer place to be, to connect with loved ones and family, and international travel is shut down for the time being, people flock to the outdoors like never before. When you look at participation data, and I'm sure American Horse Council has data like this, you see millions more people getting outdoors than ever before. And a lot of these people, for the first time, who've seen outdoor recreation, they've seen people on horseback, they know it's interesting, but they haven't really put it as a priority in their life. Turns out a global pandemic is a good time to make that a priority. And in those economic impact stats, we see 2020 decline a bit because of those months of shutdown. And then in 2021 and 2022, 19% growth nationwide in the outdoor rec economy, followed by another 10% growth. So the outdoor rec economy is really on the rise in a big way. And I think there's a couple contributing factors, one of which, of course, is the pandemic. Second of which is the rise of remote and hybrid work. Mm-hmm. So increasingly you have people uprooting and moving to live and work in places where they have great outdoor recreation access and they can do their work. So someone you can imagine spending their day behind a computer and then getting on horseback for a ride after work, because the global economy enables that now. That wasn't a norm 3 years ago. And so that's why we're seeing such a rise in outdoor recreation participation, but also outdoor economic activity.
Yeah, I can honestly say we saw so much of that in our specific niche of outdoor rec. But just sort of tangentially, I'd also say we saw horse adoptions go up mm-hmm. like crazy during the pandemic.
Interesting.
Just what you're describing, Chris, where suddenly people have moved from urban to rural areas. They've got the time. They've got the flexibility. They said, hey, I've always wanted to learn to ride, or hey, I've got the space here. Now I can be at home to maybe muck stalls or feed or whatever it would take to have a horse. And so the rescues and sanctuaries were really stunned how much the adoption rates went up during the pandemic.
That sounds like both a great thing for exposure to the importance of horses and also a huge education opportunity for mm-hmm. all these new owners and users.
Yeah. I jokingly said to somebody the other day, I think what happened was somebody said, let's go to this rescue and see if they've got something appropriate. And they got there and smartly said, well, you know, horses like to have a companion when they're out in the pasture. Take two, right. You know, kind of thing.
Right.
Saw some big jump there. Megan, you have any closing questions for Chris?
Yeah, I just, Chris, you know, some of our listeners might be curious. Have you ever hit the trails on horseback?
With frequency,
awesome.
In places as diverse as the Rocky Mountains to the beaches of Mexico. I, before my time at ORR, worked for the National Outdoor Leadership School, or NOLS. And as part of that program, for those of you who are familiar with Mountain West, horses are an incredibly important component to running a successful field course. So two experiences, one of which was in our staff initiation and sort of initial onboarding and getting to know each other. We did a horse retreat at the Three Peaks Ranch, cool. which is alongside the Wind River Range. And we spent the day on horseback connecting with our new team for the first time, getting to know each other. And what a spectacular, you know, environment to ride horseback. You feel like you're in the 1800s all of a sudden. I didn't look as impressive as if I was riding horseback in the 1800s, but I certainly felt that impressive. And then in addition, for Knowles courses that go deep into the backcountry, they rely entirely on horsepacking for resupplies.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the student courses that I led, it was always such a sort of capstone moment for the trip to get to this halfway point, meet by a trailhead, and have this line of horses come through with new rations for the second half of the trip. The students' eyes would light up, not just because of the new food that was coming in, but also seeing these amazing animals at work. So horses have been a big part of my outdoor recreation experience, and I'm looking forward to rides down the trail in the future.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today, Chris. We really appreciate it. And guys, feel free to go out and check out the Outdoor Recreation Roundtable's website. There's lots of great resources out there, a lot of content, some great programs that they're offering that cut across all segments of outdoor recreation. So we encourage you to go check that out.
Thanks for having me, Julie and Megan. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris. Well, that was awesome. I loved learning a lot about the horse trails of America, and plus what ORR really does. But continuing on our theme on the great outdoors and recreational riding, Julie, we heard some updates on legislation from Chris, which was very helpful. But what other stats and what other information do we have going on for this month's legislative update?
So I thought what I would do is cherry pick a couple of pieces of data out of the National Economic Impact Study that sort of relates to the recreation sector. We were talking a little bit earlier about how much time and how many folks get out and ride on the trails. Mm-hmm. But a shout out to Horse Trails of America and Backcountry Horsemen of America, because they're the ones that are out there helping to ensure that we've got good, you know, trails and good trail
doing
amenities.
The dirty work.
Yeah. And out of the economic impact study, I think this is a fascinating statistic. We have 2.2 million jobs paying jobs in our industry, but we have 2 million volunteers in our industry in any given year. And just as an example, Backcountry Horsemen of America report that over 207,000 volunteer hours in a year working on trails. So it's a very, very impressive number. Yeah. We want to thank them for all they do to help the rest of us get out there and do what we do. I also thought an interesting statistic for our listeners today was we have been really interested in environmental sustainability. How do we as an industry contribute back to Mother Earth, if you will? What do we do? And so a new stat this time around is on land preservation. And we know that 12.5 million acres of land in the U.S. Are used for horse acreage, which is a great green space, you know, kind of statement. And we know that 62% of horse owners own or lease property. And so when we think about using the economic impact to influence legislative or regulatory things, we use those kinds of statistics to talk to zoning people or to other organizations about what we're doing and how we can partner together to ensure that everybody gets an opportunity to get out and recreate together successfully, kind of thing. So.
Exactly. Yep. Definitely got to save that green space so we can take advantage of it all. Well, thank you for joining us today. I'm even more inspired to hit the trail soon and hope to get my horses legged up for it. If you're ready to plan some trail riding or you want to know more about recreational opportunities, we'll provide some links in our show notes down below. So feel free to take a look at what we've got from ORR and Horse Trails of America.
And we want to invite you to support our industry and join the American Horse Council. You can get our monthly newsletter to learn all about the legislative, regulatory, and other kinds of things we have going on, whether at the federal or state level, as well as information just for the casual horse owner that wants to understand some of the implications or some of the things that are out there and available.
Follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn. And you can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player. And you can find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Thanks, Megan. And listeners, as we always like to say, we are #HereForHorses. Till next time.